This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stefan Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And today we are coming at you. It sounds kind of intimidating. We're coming to you with another episode of Book Club. Content warning for brief discussion of sexual abuse, ableism, physical abuse, pain, suicidality. We're not going to talk too much in depth about any of those things, but just to put that out there. Also, this is a very quote heavy episode. I think I've described this before, but a lot of times when we do book club, I read the book, and as I go through, I just copy paste quotes as I'm reading, because I'm like, oh, this is relevant. Oh, this is relevant. And then at the end, I go back and try to make it so it's not a huge thing. This one originally was 15 pages of quotes, and I had to go through and pick and choose. And so I will tell you, please go read this book. I personally wish I had read it way earlier. I've been talking about it for a while. It is called Care Work, Dreaming Disability Justice by Leah Lakshmi Peepsnut Samara Sinha. And it's from 2018. And yeah, I just wish I had read it earlier, especially before, as I've said, I wrote about disability in the book that we have coming out. But it was so informative. It is a collection of personal essays about disability justice, especially through the lens of sick and disabled queer, trans, Black, and brown people. And it also includes quotes and segments written by others in the community. And it has advice and tips, and it's really open. It's got a lot of vulnerable stories about the realities and possibilities of disability justice. So, as with a lot of these episodes where Samantha and I can't really speak to the experience, this is a very quote heavy episode.
Right. I think before we were recording, I was like, look, there's so much that they say that trying to act like we have some commonality to it, not that we don't, because there's definitely a lot to it. We were talking about when we talk about sexual abuse, and they talk about PTSD, and they talk about trauma in itself. All of that is familiar, and especially when it comes to like anxiety and depression, because I was like, oh, they kind of hit some nails on the head that I did not recognize. Once again, we talked about this earlier in a Monday Mini when we were talking about, I did not really think about disabilities as my anxiety, but when the fact of the matter is, it actually holds me back from doing things. I was like, oh yeah, that actually makes sense then. And I just don't see it as a disability because it's an invisible disability, A. B, it doesn't feel like it's severe as other types of disabilities, even though that is also ableist in its own mindset. But yeah, in this, with their experience, as well as who they talk to and who they are referencing, they say it best. And so why do we need to replace it?
Yes. But that being said, please support them and check out their work. Mm-hmm. Yes. And through everything I've seen, read, they do go by they, them pronouns. But as always, if that's incorrect, let us know. But let's start, because disability justice is at the heart of this book. So let's break down that term. Quote, disability justice is a term coined by the Black, Brown, queer, and trans members of the original Disability Justice Collective, founded in 2005 by Patty Byrne, Mia Mungus, Stacey Milburn, Leroy Moore, Eli Clare, and Sebastian Margaret. Disabled, queer, and trans Black, Asian, and white activists and artists, they dreamed up a movement building framework that would center the lives, needs, and organizing strategies of disabled queer and trans and or Black and brown people marginalized from mainstream disability rights organizing's white-dominated single-issue focus. And another quote, in the words of SINS Invalid co-founder and executive director Patty Byrne, while a concrete and radical move forward toward justice for disabled people, the disability rights movement simultaneously invisibilized the lives of people who lived at intersecting junctures of oppression. Disabled people of color, immigrants with disabilities, queers with disabilities, trans and gender nonconforming people with disabilities, people with disabilities who are houseless, people with disabilities who are incarcerated, people with disabilities who have had their ancestral lands stolen, amongst others. Disability justice activists, organizers, and cultural workers understand that able-bodied supremacy has been formed in relation to other systems of domination and exploitation. The histories of white supremacy and ableism are inextricably entwined, both forged in the crucible of colonial conquest and capitalist domination. One cannot look at the history of U.S. slavery, the stealing of indigenous lands, and U.S. imperialism without seeing the way that white supremacy leverages ableism to create a subjugated other that is deemed less worthy, slash abled, slash smart, slash capable. We cannot comprehend ableism without grasping its interrelations with heteropatriarchy, white supremacy, colonialism, and capitalism. Each system benefits from extracting profits and status from the subjugated other. 500 plus years of violence against Black and brown communities includes 500 plus years of bodies and minds deemed dangerous by being non-normative. A disability justice framework understands that all bodies are unique and essential, that all bodies have strengths and needs that must be met. We know that we are powerful, not despite the complexities of our bodies, but because of them. Disability justice holds a vision born out of collective struggle, drawing upon the legacies of cultural and spiritual resistance within a thousand underground paths, igniting small, persistent fires of rebellion in everyday life. Disabled people of the global majority, Black and brown people, share common ground confronting and subverting colonial powers in our struggle for life and justice. There has always been resistance to all forms of oppression, as we know through our bones that there have simultaneously been disabled people visioning a world where we flourish, that values and celebrates us in all our myriad beauty. Yeah. Again, we can't say it better than that.
Right. And I think there's so much depth and history within that conversation.
Yeah.
When we talked about colonialization and past ugly histories and what that looks like when we take it intersectionally, and they are definitely diving into that conversation. Here's more of a quote. More than that, disability justice asserts that ableism helps make racism, Christian supremacy, sexism, and queer and transphobia possible, and that all those systems of oppression are locked up tight. So there's that concluding conversation about the intersectional bit of types of discrimination and what it can lead to in this power play. Mm-hmm. And then going on, it is underdocumented private work, work often seen as not, quote, real activism, but it is the realest activism there is. This is how disability justice, art, and activism change the world and save lives. In writing this book, I wanted to capture some of this history as it is being made and dreamed.
Right. And so, yeah, the book is kind of laid out in a series of essays around certain topics, all of them revolving around disability justice. There's a section that has the 10 principles of disability justice by Patty Byrne, edited by Aurora Levins Morales and David Langstaff on behalf of SINS Invalid. From my vantage point with SINS Invalid, quote, we incubate both the framework and practice of disability justice. This burgeoning framework has 10 principles, each offering new opportunities for movement builders. And the first one is intersectionality. Then leadership of those most impacted, anti-capitalist politic, cross-movement solidarity, recognizing wholeness, sustainability, commitment to cross-disability solidarity, interdependence, collective access, collective liberation.
Right. I think that's really important that they really, really hone in on is collective or community and what that looks like, as well as not necessarily bargaining, but understanding that there is a trade.
Like there's a, yeah, there's a balance.
There's a balance and there's a good faith in being able to be a community and being a collective.
Yes. And again, we can't quote the whole book for many reasons. Please go support it.
Because you need to buy the book.
Yeah. That's one of the big ones. But also, there are just so many beautiful examples of how this could look when that's like dreaming disability justice, what could look like. There's so many in there of how that could work, how it could look. And if you're still kind of like, what does that mean exactly? One of the big parts of it is something called care webs. So here's a quote. What does it mean to shift our ideas of access and care, whether it's disability, childcare, economic access, or many more, from an individual chore, an unfortunate cost of having an unfortunate body, to a collective responsibility that's maybe even deeply joyful? What does it mean for our movements, our communities, our fam, ourselves, and our own lived experience of disability and chronic illness? What does it mean to wrestle with these ideas of softness and strength, vulnerability, pride, asking for help, and not, all of which are so deeply raced and classed and gendered? If collective access is revolutionary love without charity, how do we learn to love each other? How do we learn to do this love work of collective care that lifts us instead of abandons us, that grapples with all the deep ways in which care is complicated? And then the quote goes on, I wrote this because I believe we stand at the crossroads between both the gifts and the unexpected, inevitable collapses of our work, and we have the opportunity to dream and keep dreaming ways to build emergent, resilient care webs. I believe that our work in creating the new world depends on it, because all of us became disabled and sick, because all of us will become disabled and sick, because state systems are failing, yet community is not a magic unicorn, a one-stop shop that always helps us do the laundry and be held in need. I believe that the only way we will do this is by being f***ing real, by not papering over the places where our rhetoric falls flat, where we ran out of steam, or where the is genuinely f***ing hard. Yep, so much yes.
Right.
And that's one of the, I would say, truly open and vulnerable parts of this book is that is very honest in where things do fall flat, like where it's just a really complicated, complex thing. And changing that mindset of it from it's a chore to it being a deeply joyous thing, but also just that whole asking for help and asking, not asking for help and navigating all of that.
And then, like, I know they talk about it soon, but they talk about the fact that for those who are at this time able-bodied being requested to help,
yes.
being understanding to the fact that this is not because they want to. And the matter of the fact is that those who are saying that they are for disability justice, meaning they accept all of it, whether it's in anger and frustration and all of that, being open to all of the emotions that come with it and stop being the kind of like the savior hat, which yeah. many people take upon, which is, again, ableist.
Yes. And I cut it out again because I had so many quotes in here. But there was also a whole section on what was called, like, for people who are able-bodied and had a temporary, or not always temporary, but are now, like, not able-bodied and, you know, putting up those Facebook posts and getting all that support and then that fading away pretty quickly if it doesn't go away very quickly, and people with disabilities seeing that and being like, well, here I am. I've been doing this and you haven't shown up for me at all. But yeah, that was a big topic of asking for help, receiving care. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Here's a quote. As Ronham of RAMP Vancouver writes, if interdependency is in our DNA, what does it mean when we fall out of whack with it? How do we handle the realities of our bodies and minds that need what they need when they need it? What does it mean when I can't support you in the ways you're supporting me? Does interdependency mean we do the same for one another at all times? And so there's even such a thing as the same when it comes to this stuff. Is it a gentle ebb and flow? What if my ebb will never match your flow? What if it's sometimes a torrential downpour and one of us is drowning? What do we do then? There were more questions, like what happened when some of us could hang out together more because we had fewer mobility needs? We could make it into a car, could deal with exposures, and some of us couldn't. How did we make things feel fair when some of us got tired and sick and needed to cancel, and others, maybe folks who practiced sucking it up and working through pain more, maybe just folks who didn't have pain and fatigue, were left feeling like they were doing all the work? What about those of us who felt more comfortable going to non-disabled events together, so got to spend that time and get that visibility, and those of us who were more overwhelmed or had more anxiety about being stared at? And maybe the biggest disabled community question of all, what happens when a lot of people who have always been the only one are no longer the only disabled queer of color in the room? How does that affect how we work together, build community, and work out conflict? Sometimes because we are used to being the only revolutionary crip fighting ableism in a sea of able-bodied obliviousness, it was hard for us to hear that we weren't always right, to understand differences of opinion or approach or experience as other than wrong or attack or threat. After a year, our group broke up, and they were describing a specific group they set up. From all of these pressures and hard spots and a web of interpersonal conflict, it was a hard breakup. I felt like my dream sick and disabled QT BIPOC crew had fallen apart, that a community I had passionately believed in and given much of my limited energy to had failed. I didn't know that one group falling apart didn't have to mean that was it for the idea of building a care web for the movement. I wish we could have known that the struggles we hit weren't failures or signs of how inadequate we were, but incredibly valuable learnings. And yeah, that's true, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't always work out, but you learn from it and then you build off of that.
Right. And they don't stop.
No.
What was the other key?
Mm-mm.
Another quote. Yet, as I move forward in this life of creating and receiving care, I'm continually impressed by how we find ways to keep each other alive when the state is f***ed and community can be f***ed and inadequate too. I love seeing how friends and strangers seem to be more and more used to crowdfunding care and setting up CareShift Google Docs. I also see the burnout and exploitation of often femme and disabled labor that happens, and also what happens when people plain run out of energy, money, and time. I think about the needs I have that I am still too ashamed to let anyone see, let alone take care of. I also think about friends and strangers who have plenty of needs, but not enough friends or strangers willing and able to come through to care for them. The community is not a magic utopia, just like our families weren't, and we don't all just magically love each other or even like each other, let alone agree on every political issue.
Yes, and that was a point that came up a lot in the book was, right. You know, even if nobody likes you, and a lot of times that's because you're in pain and you're not feeling
right.
very personable or right. sociable. That doesn't mean you should not get care that you need.
Right.
Yes. Here's another quote. Are the poor and working class disabled femmes doing all the work all the time? Care is feminized and invisibilized labor. Care is something that many, not all, poor/working class folks do like breathing. We got time. It's just the right thing to do, right? What's going on with race and entitlement? Who feels comfy asking? Are the white queers, the pretty queers, the middle class, relatively happy, skinny, normal queers getting much care? How many masculine gendered people have I cared the ass off for with no reciprocity? Talk about this stuff. It's really important. Disrupt it. Get the mask, pretty, able people to put in time. And here is another quote. This is an excellent example of where disability rights bumps against disability justice. A rights framework says that the ADA and other pieces of civil rights legislation give disabled citizens our rights. We simply state the law and get our needs met. Disability justice says, what if you're disabled and undocumented? What if you think the settler colonial nation we live in is a farce and a hallucination? What if you don't have money to sue an inaccessible business? What if the people giving you accommodations and access technology or not are not paid for by the state, but part of your community? I agree that our access to access and the world should not be predicated on desirability or popularity or approval of the able-bodied masses or anyone. And I hold a deep place of respect for the ways so many of us have been denied access to love. But when I say the word love, I mean something more crypt out and weird than the traditional desirability politics many of us are forced to try to survive and live within. I mean that when we reach for each other and make the most access possible, it is a radical act of love.
Right. I guess that underlying, like, actually seeing beyond your heteronormative ableist ideals, because they definitely talked a lot about different things that I haven't even considered when it comes to activism in itself. And how mm-hmm. it's so exclusionary, just a walking in a pace, mm-hmm. being allowed to be late. Like, we have such an unfortunate level of hierarchy, and especially when it comes to success and being successful mm-hmm. about, like, time and such, that mm-hmm. is really ableist, and I've never really thought about that. And I'm like, huh, that is a whole right. conversation we don't talk about. And then there's another quote. There is grief mixed in with the rage and survival and a belief that you must be spoiled or entitled to ask for what you need. It reminds me of survivors who stubbornly insist that their parents beat them and they came out just fine. I honor the survival skills of denying need and getting the f*** by have been things that kept us alive, but I believe our beloved dead want us to do more than life on one cracker and an inaccessible building forever. And yeah, this whole level of, well, you need to just deal with it, it's so infuriating for all the things in this whole level of, like, well, I got by, why can't you? And then, like, we see that prime example as when it comes to race and when it comes to feminism and women's issues. But the conversation is truly, like, but why should they have to? Everybody has been advanced, and we all can take that time to care and not want them just to survive, but to truly live and to be able to do more than just live on crackers, as they say.
Right. And I think that goes back to what you said earlier about the why this is so important for intersectionality is, as we talked about in our recent disability pride check-in, I had a lot of this internalized ableism around like, oh, I'm so strong. Look how much pain I can put up with before I do something. And that's just such a toxic mindset of why, if I don't need to be, like, who's profiting off of this? Not me. Not me. And there is a lot of discussion around that in this book, too, of the things I've been wrestling with around capitalism and ableism. And I want to put this in because there is some history about kind of in North America when colonialism came in and how it changed for the indigenous people. So, quote, disabled Cherokee scholar Quoley Driscoll has remarked that in pre-contact Cherokee, there are many words for people with different kinds of bodies, illnesses, and what would be seen as impairments. None of those words are negative or view those sick or disabled people as defective or not as good as normatively bodied people. With the arrival of white settler colonialism, things changed, and not in a good way. For many sick and disabled Black, Indigenous, and Brown people under the transatlantic enslavement, colonial invasion, and forced labor, there was no such thing as state-funded care. Instead, if we were too sick or disabled to work, we were often killed, sold, or left to die because we were not making factory or plantation owners money. Sick, disabled, mad, deaf, and neurodivergent people's care and treatment varied according to race, class, gender, and location. But for the most part, at best, we were able to evade capture and find ways of caring for ourselves or being cared for by our families, nations, or communities, from our Black and Brown communities to disabled communities. At worst, a combination of legal and societal ableism plus racism and colonialism meant that we were locked up in institutions or hospitals for our own good. The ugly laws on the books in the United States from the mid-1700s to the 1970s stated that many disabled people were too ugly to be in public and legally prevented disabled people from being able to take up space in public. Yeah. Mm. And another part of this conversation, a big part of this book, is something called healing justice. Here's a quote. I've been involved in what's known as the healing justice movement since 2010 and have been involved and invested in healing as a form of liberation and social justice all my life. From when I was a little survivor brown femme disabled kid to when I was a 19-year-old feeling ashamed of her altar and interest in herbs and tarot because they were a departure from the real struggle. The healing justice movement was created in response to all of those things, from burnout to ableist movement cultures that denigrate and dismiss healing as not serious, to a lack of access to high-quality healing and healthcare by oppressed people. And in the hope of reclaiming the ways our oppressed, surviving communities have always healed, from before colonization to now.
And going on, most sick and disabled people I know approach healing wanting specific things, less pain, less anxiety, more flexibility, but not usually to become able-bodied. And many of us don't feel automatically comfortable going to healing spaces at all because of our histories of being seen as freaks, scrutinized, infantilized, patronized with what happened, prayed over, and asked, have you tried acupuncture? And a million other, quote, miracle cures. Able-bodied practitioners without an anti-ableist analysis, including Reiki providers and anti-oppression therapists, often see us as objects of disgust, fascination, and or inspiration porn. Mostly, these practitioners dismiss our lived expertise about our body minds and their needs. Or on the flip side, they tell us we're, quote, not really disabled when we insist on the realities of our lives.
Yeah. There's a lot of that in there of like, no, you're fine. Like, well.
So I'm guessing films like Doctor Strange is the ultimate to this context of ableist.
Yeah, definitely not a good. No, not good. And yeah, that was a big, speaking of, that was also a big thing with this was white people jumping in, trying to dominate the space, trying to make money. So that's like a clear, always research.
Right. We were going to do a whole episode on white women and yoga, but we had so many other subjects, but this kind of comes into the play of like, what has it become?
Right. And that's, you know, we also talked about it with veganism, where there's kind of this white vegan movement of like, we've discovered it. Like, no, you didn't. Just sort of like, you can participate in yoga, you can be vegan, you can participate in this, but it's about respect and knowing the history and not taking up the space, the room, getting the money, and forcing people out who actually have that history. Also, yes, there was a lot of talk about sexuality and desirability, which we've discussed a lot when it comes to disability and how that's often erased, including some specific projects that have had more positive portrayals of disabled sexuality and how important that is. And then going back to what you were saying, Samantha, which is something we wrote about in the book, but there is a big conversation about the accessibility of movements, of activism, of advocacy. So here's a quote. "But I remain with many other femme and feminine people harmed by misogyny, where endless free care work and emotional labor is simply the role my community and the world has for us. We are supposed to wipe the asses of the world without ceasing. As a newly physically disabled working class femme of color in the 1990s, I often felt how the queer and radical prison justice communities I was part of looked down upon my gender, especially when I was disabled and broke and surviving abuse and needing support. Then I really sucked. I was just another needy, weak girl, huh? The one place femme people could receive respect in those communities was if we were tough and vulnerable, always on, and never needing a thing. I know I'm not alone, and I know this experience has not ended."
I find that interesting, that being tough, and which is, again, kind of that whole, we've talked about it in so many episodes, whether it's a mom episode, whether it's about pain or being a survivor of trauma, like this need to be tough and then being able to show that you can handle it, as if that's a merit. And what's going on, what I want to tease out and focus on are the ways that misogyny, femphobia, and transmisogyny come together to royally screw over femme people of many genders, how misogyny, femphobia, and transmisogyny are part of the global systems of gender that extract the hell of a lot of labor and energy from femme and feminized people, from parenting and caretaking being considered free labor, to sexist assumptions of femme perma availability being made in queer and trans communities. Also, the gendered wage gap is real. Cis and trans women really do get paid less than cis men and women and femmes who are racialized, disabled, imprisoned, and institutionalized. Trans, rural, and poor working class get paid extra bad.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential, and then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. And with over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with the eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is kind of unrelated, kind of related, but we just did an episode on what's going on with the strikes, the actor strike and the writer strike. And I read a lot about kind of women, and in particular, Black women being frustrated because they'd had conversations with the men that they're striking with that just dismiss them. And so, like, they're in the same cause. They want the same things, mostly. But having that, like, and that does happen in activism, too. Like, that's what we talk about with white feminism. But it's also, like, if you're talking about just all of these ways that activism is race and gendered and class and all of those things. It doesn't go away just because you're all working towards this one, general idea. Here's another quote. Sick and disabled folks will get up from where we've been projectile vomiting for the past 8 hours to drive a spare Effexor to their friend's house who just ran out. We do this because we love each other and because we often have a sacred trust not to forget about each other. Able-bodied people who think we are weak have no idea. Every day of our disabled lives is like an Ironman triathlon. Disabled, sick, poor, working class, sex working, and Black and brown femmes are some of the toughest and most resilient folks I know. You have to develop complex strengths to survive this world as us. I love how working class, femme, and disabled this care labor is. I just want it to also not be seen as an automatic expectation of any femme at any time. I want some rules so we don't feel drained, exhausted, and f***ed over. I want it to be a choice, and I want its next level genius of skill to be recognized. This is skilled labor.
I think that's such an important conversation because with Kia Brown last year, when we were having these conversations about being a Black woman, a Black disabled woman in these spaces, and then having that conversation of having to be strong because of their race, like having to pretend like that is something that's so easy. And so like you're used to it. So keep doing that and you're incredible and you should always do that. And it's like, no, but it's tiring.
Right.
And that's that same level of everything. Like when we talk about, again, with all the misogyny noir, leaning on Black women for leadership, they're like, no, we want you to do it yourself. We're doing it because we have to, not because we want to. This is not about something that we are so proud to do and we wanted to take up, is because everybody else was failing and they started, like, they left the work to us and that's where we are. And the truth of the matter is they would rather have someone else do it and let them rest for just a damn second.
Right. And I like the reframing here of toughness is like just surviving when no one else is helping you other than other people in your situation. But like the systems aren't helping you. Most of society isn't helping you. You're finding this community and you are. But like that idea of the tough thing is just helping other people or getting through your day when no one else is doing anything to help you. And there's a whole other section I cut out that was about those kind of emotional skills people with disability develop, and how they are not given the due that they should be. They are not seen as the skill that they should be, like things like that. And yeah, just kind of dismissing this as, oh, you're going to do it. So not recognizing that as a skill or as something that should be paid and not expected Or at least, like, page should be an option, which the book also goes into as well. Here's another quote. And this is sort of moving into the suicidality part. We're not going to get too much into it, but just a heads up. We don't want platitudes or uplift or people telling us we're loved. I mean, tell me. But I know I'm loved. Sometimes hearing that helps. Sometimes I am still deeply, deeply sad anyway. I don't have the answers, but I am interested in collectively creating them. I am interested in all of us who dance with dying, talking about all the different and real things that suicide can mean to us. All the things that allow us to stay here. And more than that, I am interested in creating models of happy, mostly queer and trans adulthood where we can be leaders and still be vulnerable, where we can be open that it's not happily ever after. Life models that encompass falling apart and reforming not as a failure, but as a life pathway.
Oh, and here's another one. The summer after that, Jericho Bolin, a 14-year-old Black queer disabled femme person with spinal muscular atrophy, too, announced her planned suicide, saying, "I'm going to be free." Bolin gained mainstream media attention for her requested death when she started on Indiegogo to raise money for Jerrica's last dance prom in the month before she would go into the hospice and ask them to shut off her ventilator. Actions the media named as brave and inspirational. She said that she didn't have a future, that she, of course, wouldn't be able to dance or date or love, so she was choosing to die. And her announcement of her planned public suicide was cheered on by her white adoptive family and mostly white rural farming community of Appleton, Wisconsin.
Yeah, that goes to show how harmful that narrative is.
Right.
Of like, you can't, there's no future. You can't be happy. There's like no possibility.
Right.
And I do love how open the author was about their own struggles with suicidality, because I think that's true. I don't think we talk about that enough. Like, you cannot have a reason. You could not have
right.
a specific thing. You could be generally happy and that feeling comes anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. We don't talk about that enough.
Right. And I think something that they also point out, because this whole kind of narrative is this idea of curing
mm-hmm.
something. And they talk about that a lot. It's like, we're not asking you to cure us. That is not a thing. That is not what we're looking at. And I know we mentioned it earlier when we say they want a relief of pain.
Mm-hmm.
They want the relief of anxiety, not to be cured. And I think it kind of comes into that same conversation about what does cure look like, and what does it mean when you're a friend of yours who died by suicide? Like, what does that mean? And is that a celebration? Is that mournful? Like, there's so many conversations to that, because it's not strange. And even as a person who is able-bodied, and I say that as an able-bodied person, but that has also mental health needs, like, I have definitely had thoughts of suicide many a times. And that's that reality, is that it's not just to people of physical disabilities. And that's a reminder of that. Like, also, one being sad and one being a celebration, that's really ableist and really, really disheartening.
It is very, very disheartening. And I wanted to include this final quote, even though, once again, I could have, it was 15 pages originally. But femmes, I love you when your hands shake too much from meds or stress or disability to put on eyeliner, let alone put it on perfectly. I love you when you don't wear eyeliner. I love you when you are deeply sad, raging, in despair, not pretty, in the same sweats for 3 days or a month, when you smell like sweat and fear and the deep sad. I love you when you cough up phlegm. I love you when you scream and rage and ache. I love you when you don't wear those 5-inch heels because your feet hurt, or it's a sexier choice as a disabled femme to wear kicks, like the gold glitter ones I'm wearing right now. And I want a community where we can be messy and pain, hurting, imperfect, and we really know that our genders are still seen and cherished. I just love that. I think that's also, going back to what you said, is this idea of like community, of not looking for the cure, but looking for a world where people with disability can be supported and
right.
not have to fight so hard to
right.
get that support, to get basic needs, where it's not dependent on where your friends can be there for you, but also you can have something else if they can't be there for you.
Right.
That time.
Right. Yeah, there's so many things that they break down. They even talk about being able to meet people where they're at. They talk about the movements in California where they thought was going to be a mecca and a home. But then there are so many stipulations and hierarchies even there. They open up about people who want to be, the whole conversation about what disability justice it was. Like that was an incredible conversation, because oftentimes people who are on the outside with like good intentions fall so hard and then get frustrated at those that they're trying to help, that you're like, what was the point then? Well, what are you really doing? Because they don't look at it. Again, we've talked about this before. We've been talking about it a lot recently, because they're not at the table. They're not there to have their opinions talked about or even a part of the conversation. So therefore, there's no understanding of those needs, things that we don't think about and take for granted, but they immediately take, like immediately think on it, whether it's access through having to sit down or having to have medications being done, having to be able to go into a different area to be able to calm and have a space out. Like there's so many things that's not often thought about. I feel like maybe people are getting better, but they're still not understanding. If you don't include the people who you are trying to fight for, you're never actually doing justice.
Right. Right. And that goes back to the accessibility of movements like this and why this is so necessary. And it really is. Like, please read it. I wish I had read it earlier. And there's so much more that we could talk about with this, and I'm sure we'll come back to it. But in the meantime, if you have any suggestions for books we should read, you can email us at stephmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at StuffMomNeverToldYou. We have a Tee Public store with merchandise. We also have a book you can pre-order at StuffYouShouldReadBooks.com and on Audible. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you all so much.
Yes. And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.